Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Weather State Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
Matt, today we've got a phenomenal episode. We have Jeff Langford from JDL Homes, family-owned business, couple brothers.
Couple brothers from out east.
Sounds familiar.
It does. These guys are a little stronger. Maybe even a little brighter.
He can grow a proper beard.
Yeah, there's...
They've got some distinct characteristics that we don't have as brothers. He can pick things up that are heavy.
Yeah.
And he can grow facial hair. Jeff
Langford, yeah.
Super nice guy.
Fantastic guy.
I feel like Jeff's got a way about him that he could be a TV personality on like a TLC show almost or something.
He definitely does have that way about him. Yeah.
Like what's the one where they're testing theories, you know, that show
thinking like on a building show.
Yeah, no, I feel that way too. I feel like he could be
you're talking could, about like a science
could,
show
no he could be no though well there's the I god it's been on forever they're testing, everybody's saying it out loud right now, I just can't figure it out, but they're testing if stuff is actually could be true.
Oh,
so for example, they heard that somebody could hold their breath underwater for 5 minutes, and then they test that theory to see Mythbusters.
Oh, right. Okay, I've never seen that.
No?
No.
No. No. Okay, well, the other thing I'm thinking of is Ice Road Truckers or something along those lines. I feel like he could be on a variety of those shows.
Either way, it was a great talk. There's tons of useful information, and we're talking to Jeff today about the bog.
Yeah, the bog, the peat bog. And here's the thing. We go really deep with Jeff.
Because his company, which is JDL Homes Vancouver,
yes,
builds a lot of homes on peat bog here in Vancouver. So
these guys, they build a lot of homes just in general.
Yeah, period.
Right? And they definitely, I can imagine not a lot of builders. Like there's some challenges when you're building on peat bog. And we discussed those today, and it's probably, you know, not everyone would like to take those challenges on as a builder, I bet. It's probably easier projects.
I feel like there's much easier projects, and they're called spec homes online that doesn't sink, whereas these guys are doing custom homes. Jeff said he likes a challenge.
Yeah.
And he'll take on a challenge, and that excites him. But anyway, it's a great conversation.
Fantastic guys. Fantastic company. One thing about, for people that are not familiar with the boglands in Vancouver, had a lot of swamps and riverbeds that were kind of running throughout the city. And these are, like, a lot of people think of this as Trout Lake, right? You think about like around bodies of water where this might be the case. But in reality, there's bogland in Carisdale, Arbutus, Canby, Fraser, Mount Pleasant, of course, around Trout Lake,
Hastings,
Sunrise, Hastings and Boundary. There's pockets in
right
southeast
near Hastings
Vancouver.
And Nanaimo.
Yeah, exactly.
Am I dreaming this or have I seen an old photo of a guy
in a canoe?
In a canoe in East Vancouver where you're like, oh, there's the great flood of it. And I was like, no, that was just East Vancouver.
That was just, he was just going on a craft beer tour in 1904. there is actually,
I've seen that photo.
I think I might have even had that photo at some time. But there, East Van was, it was swamp and marshlands. So
right.
You could definitely travel by canoe at one point. These swamps and riverbeds were drained and they were built on. And what most people will be familiar with is when you're driving around these neighborhoods, you'll see the streets are kind of cresting. The sidewalks are often very uneven. And I was at a house last week that was on bog and the house itself had sunk on one side.
Mm-hmm.
So it was actually like, and it wasn't like hard to see. The whole house was just completely not plum level.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. No, it's something that a lot of people have lived with for a long time.
Sure.
But yeah, it's a great conversation. I think the exciting parts about this conversation are it's a conversation that really allows you to understand what the challenges are.
Right.
When buying, why or why not to avoid peat. What the challenges are to build on it. It's a great conversation.
It is a great conversation. But before we get to our conversation with Jeff, Matt, we got to talk about our sponsor, Oakland Realty.
That's right, Oakland Realty. This is our brokerage, best brokerage in town, top 200 growing companies in Canada.
It's impressive.
It is impressive. It's a young company, but man, they've done a lot in what, the 5-6 years they've been around, that's for sure. Head over to oakwin.com/join, type in VRP2020. That's oakwin.com/join, type in VRP2020. This is, of course, for aspiring agents, new agents, agents looking to make a change. It's a brokerage that will get you excited and get you productive.
And take you to the next level.
And take you to the next level.
Absolutely. Right. So definitely head over there and check out oakwin.com. And Matt, also, we got to talk about the Sellers Club.
We got to talk about the Sellers Club is right. I feel like we're in mid-October, but
yes.
Man, is it me or are listings ramping up?
It feels busy. Yeah, yeah. But in general, I think a lot of people right now are trying to catch the fall market. We do have some time before December, which historically has kind of been a slower period.
But we'll
period.
See. In COVID, that's not necessarily the case.
COVID, it's like all bets are off on timelines now.
Exactly. Think
people
August.
Are sick of their families. They want to spend time selling real estate.
That's right.
Or buying it. No, but really, it's up. It's up for anyone's interpretation, I guess, right now, whether December will be busy or not. But it feels so busy right now that it's hard to imagine December being slow.
That's right. Yeah, it's hard to imagine that it's going to slow down too much. But I think we're really burying the lead. And that's about this exclusive club.
Yes. Yeah. The Sellers Club is the best place to get top performing action plans to sell your home for top dollar in the shortest amount of time.
This is a no obligation club. Volume 1 is out. It's got things like the sold plan,
yep.
Which stands for
start on launch date.
Start on launch date. That was an incredible acronym that Adam came up with. Yeah. I'll give you full credit for that. But really, really useful information. It's free. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com and sign up for that. But maybe we've been chatting quite a bit here, and this is a good episode.
If you live in Vancouver and you are contemplating buying a home or building a home, this is must.
Or just interested in why you keep tripping over the sidewalk.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. No, this is a great episode. Without further ado, our conversation with Jeff Langford
from JDL Homes Vancouver. Enjoy.
Okay, so we're here with Jeff Langford from JDL Homes. How are you doing, Jeff?
Great, thank you very much.
Let's say JDL Homes Vancouver.
JDL Homes Vancouver, yeah.
That's
fine. We want to make sure that people can find you. But Jeff, can you maybe start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Yeah, I'm in partners with my brother, Doug, and that's where the JDL comes from, Jeff and Doug Langford. So that's that. So that's that story. We started in Vancouver about 15 years ago or so, building for ourselves. I didn't have the heart for that kind of work. So we, but in the process, people would see our work. They liked our work, asked them to do work for them. And basically it started as renovations. And a few years later, we incorporated. A few years after that, we were building new homes. And that's the history.
And you guys build almost exclusively custom homes.
That's correct. Yeah. Now we're full custom homes and renovations at this point. Yeah.
Just thinking about that, like you didn't have the heart for it, like you didn't have the nerves of steel that it takes
to carry a bunch of lots
and
exactly
and weather storms
exactly to wait months and months and months for, you know, a possible sale or not. It's a tough game, and I have a lot of respect for the people that do it, and that is just not me, 100%. Yeah.
You know, it's funny, like in my neighborhood, I just watch a lot of single families are being turned into duplexes right now. And those guys buy, you know, it's like down market, those guys are buying lots. COVID, those guys are buying lots. Yeah, they're just pumping through. And I often think, like, man, you see the guy pull up and it's like, man, at certain points.
He usually looks like he doesn't sleep.
Yeah, exactly. And they're winning some and they're losing some, and you just they just let it roll off their back, I guess, and carry on. But again, that's definitely not us. We enjoy building quality homes for good people, and that's where I'm comfortable.
Yeah. Is it stressful building for people? It must be as well.
It was early on when, you know, you're eager to get the work and so on, but you might not have all of your wants and needs in alignment, right? So we're really good now at finding our people, the people that want to build a quality home and so on. So we're very good at that vetting process, and that's really important. In those early days, you're trying to take everything you can to build a name,
right?
And in some cases, you're taking projects that you shouldn't have because you don't see eye to eye with the client, right? And that's got nothing to do with the client. That's just they have specific personality. We do. And if you don't see eye to eye, then it doesn't work, right?
Right.
So it was more often in the early days.
Right.
Not so much now.
And do you guys, like, when do people bring you on typically?
In a lot of cases, too late. And again, I'll actually speak on that today when we're regarding building on Pete. The earlier, the better with bringing on a builder, in terms of we've actually had a lot of successful partnerships with people where we actually help them buy the lot and actually help them find a house. And we'd go through to the open houses with them. We'd talk about the pros and cons of this style of architecture and the generation that it was built in and the pros and cons. And so the earlier, the better. Quite often we're brought on after drawings are done. And so that's when things start to get a little negative or frustrating for clients, because they a lot of the decisions have already been made regardless of the budget and so on, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So it's really important to bring us on early because we know how to achieve the client's goals, right?
Yeah.
And we also know exactly how much everything costs, where, you know, a designer architect may not be in touch or in tune as much as we are.
Right.
Right. So
a little bit more pie in the sky, I guess.
Well, yeah, and they have a job to do, and their job is to create something beautiful,
yeah.
Right? And of course, the client and the architect, they can start to have fun together, and they jive together, and things are looking beautiful. And, you know, sometimes it's the job of the builder to say, well, wait a minute. Let's see how much this is all going to cost. It looks beautiful on paper, but how much is it going to cost? Is it going to work within your budget, right?
You know, just thinking here before we get in too deep into kind of Pete and what we're talking about, like, so you and your brother are from, like, before we went live, I just mentioned, you know, we're brothers, work in real estate in Vancouver, from Manitoba originally. You guys are from Ontario.
That's correct.
How did you get your start as builders out here?
Well, our forefathers on my mother's side were actually master builders in small town Ontario. My brother and I both grew up on our family farm. So you're doing a lot of building on the farm, not obviously to the extent of, you know, a nice house.
Not building luxury homes.
That's right. But building nonetheless. And so it's in the family. You're working with your hands on the farm all the time. And so, of course, you know, my first few jobs off the farm were with other builders and lumber yards and so on and so forth. So it was always naturally there. I put myself through post-secondary, you know, as a handyman, you know. And so it's always been a part of my life, to be honest.
Right.
Yeah. Right from the get-go.
And how'd you guys end up in Vancouver?
I followed my brother. He came out. He worked his way as a young man across Canada, as you do, and working various jobs and in his 20s, and then landed in Vancouver, enjoyed Vancouver, and dabbled with real estate here. And then, of course, I was working in Toronto and had my own construction company in Toronto at the time. And we would communicate and talk. And wouldn't it be great if, you know, we buy this and you come over and we fix it? And then that's how the whole dream started. It was years of just talking on the phone. And then eventually I worked my way out. And that was it. Again,
wow.
As a young man. Yeah.
That's a great story. I got to ask just one, because you're talking about when people bring you on. I always wonder about the relationship of Pinterest and for builders. And I think about my wife. This is off the cuff here, but yeah. I think about my wife's how much time she spends on Pinterest.
Yeah.
We've done a number of renovations. That's got to be, is Pinterest a good or a bad thing?
For the world.
For the world.
Well, it's Pinterest is excellent at helping us, you know, see what's in the client's mind, right? They have an image, and quite often clients bless them. They just can't articulate it, right? And so Pinterest is wonderful for that. However, you know, 90% of the images that they're seeing are from some country around the world, Scandinavia or down in Central America, and we cannot build anything remotely close to what they're seeing, right? So there is some heartbreak, you know, when you're looking at the photo. Yeah, we can't do that, or that. But yeah. We now see what you're going after. We just have to do it to, you know, Vancouver code.
You're right? A Scandinavian modernist.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's right? Good
but,
to know.
But you, that drain sucks and it doesn't actually function in real life.
Or that wood stove that's 3 inches away from the kitchen cabinets, that doesn't actually work in Vancouver.
Yeah.
So that, exactly. It's the double-edged sword, the Pinterest for sure.
Well, one of the reasons, the main reason, Jeff, that we got in touch is, we know the brand JDL. But we also know that you guys have done a ton of building on peat bog in Vancouver. So can we maybe just start by kind of getting a bit of a loose definition of what is peat bog for people listening and they've never come across it?
So peat in itself is basically slow decomposing organic matter. It's plant matter. So if you think of a marsh or, you know, the edges of a lake or pond, that is typically the peat, where the peat itself is mosses and so on that have built up over years and years and years and then died, and it's slowly decomposing. But the environment that the peat creates, it's highly acidic, so it doesn't break down very quickly, and it creates methane, it creates a lot of issues in the peat. And Vancouver has, you know, quite a few. I don't know off the top of my head how many exactly,
but
there's
quite a few. Yeah.
There's quite a few. The map will show you exactly sure. How many are there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's funny because I actually just drove by a property that I was just screening. I was actually on my way to another property I saw for sale sign, and it occurred to me. I looked at the street. I saw that the main street was kind of cresting.
Mm-hmm.
The sidewalks were like a skateboarder's dream, right?
Yeah.
And it occurred to me this is probably peat. Or on bog.
That's right.
And I checked the map, and sure enough, it was on bog. But there's kind of almost telltale signs in an area, maybe depending how long the city's neglected redoing the streets and the sidewalks and the services. But you often see stuff, right, that's kind of indicative of that?
100%. Yeah, everybody's seen it. Everybody's driven through those areas where the back lane is just, you know, crested in the middle. And of course, none of the gates work and all the masonry is cracked and you can see the houses are unlevel. And that's just, you know, par for the course on peat for those houses that were unsupported properly, basically, back in the day when they were built. And yeah, so it's everywhere for sure.
So I think some people that are listening are probably like, wait, so parts of Vancouver are built on a marsh?
That's right.
100%. And that's correct.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Marshes and creek beds. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And so what challenges does building on peat pose for you guys?
Well, basically the peat doesn't have a lot of structure to it. It has some. Obviously, those houses along Trout Lake are still there,
right?
And so there is some bearing to the peat. But the trouble is that the peat never stops breaking down. And there's methane in the peat, depending on how thick it is. And I think that's a really important aspect to building on peat or buying a property in a peat bog area, is that it's not consistent at all. We've built houses where the front of the house was on bearing soil. The back of the house itself was, on 8 feet of peat. So, you know, we were just on the edge of a peat bog, or you can be smack dab in the middle with 30 some odd feet of bog and blue clay beyond that. There's just nothing there. Yeah. Right. And so that's really important when you're choosing, to build on the peat bog, that you bring the builder along with you for that journey. Because again, for me, I can pick up a phone, I have different contractors that will, you know, pile contractors or geotechnical engineers. I can call them, say, hey, I'm on this block. And they're like, yeah, well, we worked on a house just down the street or two houses down, and there was 10 feet of peat, right? It's not guaranteed, but at least you get a ballpark. And then we can work on ballpark numbers until you get into the serious testing and dial in what needs to be done to that site, right?
Well, when you look at the map, it's funny because the border of the peat is not clean at all.
That's right.
It jets out. So I mean, you could have, you know, if you looked at a dozen houses on a city block,
every one would be different.
Yeah, every one of them would be completely different. And that's then right. There's usually if you look, there's almost like a halo around the peat area that's kind of the liquefaction or liquefaction kind of area where it's in ground that's kind of questionable as well.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. And during those seismic events, because you have to remember the peat itself. And don't quote me on this, but it's, you know, like something like 400% water. It's like a sponge. It's a sponge full of water. And of course, you know, you could set something on top of that sponge and it would stay there and it would hold. And when that sponge dries out in the summertime, that whatever that object is going to sink. And then when it fills back up with water, it's going to come back again. And that's all quite often what those houses, the current houses are doing. Is they're coming up and down. There's an actual ebb and flow to that water table. And the water table is what really gives us the trouble with the peat, right? Or else we would just dig it out everywhere, right? But the trouble is there's a lake under there. And in most cases, you're talking 2, 3, 4 feet below the surface, you're hitting water.
Right.
Yeah. So that's the problem.
So, okay. So we're kind of establishing the problem that 100 years ago, you could have basically taken a canoe around East Vancouver.
Yes,
in certain areas. 150
years
ago.
And then we packed it full of...
What we did was we drained it.
Or we drained it,
We
okay.
drained them, yeah. We put in pipes and we drained these things, so to speak, to the point where it looks somewhat okay. And, you know, we're trying to find more land. Okay, well, let's put some drains in here. This is a swamp. Let's drain the swamp and let's build on it. Right.
Okay. And did they use sand to pack it, or what was like the conventional 1940s, 1960s kind of?
They just built right on top, like you would conventionally.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So it, you know, the science wasn't there, the testing wasn't there, and of course we didn't have the things like a helical pile. Those are relatively new inventions in the building world to support these structures, right? To support these homes.
Right. Right. Yeah. And so so the problem is that it poses some challenges, obviously, with the conditions of the land to build on.
Yeah.
So say you do buy a property on the bog, you weren't aware.
Yes.
What are some of the steps that you would take to start building and
the process.
There's several different ways, of course, depending on the type of peat. And again, there's different types. Okay. So there's different types of peat and there's different depths of peat. So you've got to address that situation. So in order to do that, you bring in a geotechnical engineer. Now that's a separate engineer from your structural engineer. So that's an additional cost. Okay. To you, they're going to bring in an excavator. They're going to do some testing. They're typically what they do is they will dig a hole unless they know that it's 30 feet deep or better, or 20 feet deep or so on. If they know that it's quite deep, then we're just going to drill a helical pile, which is, if you can imagine, it's a great big screw with a long post attached to it. And they'll screw that down into the ground to see where the bearing material is. How deep is it? And then we design basically a grid that will support the entire weight of that house, right? And then you build what is called a slab on grade on top of those piles. So you're bringing in the geotech. They're going to tell you how many piles are needed, where they're needed, and how deep they're going to go. And each one of those piles is rated by a measurement called KIPS. And basically a KIP is 1,000 pounds. So each pile has to be able to bear a certain amount of KIPS to then take the weight of the house, right? And then to further make it complicated, you look at different ways in which you can build homes, because there's panelized products that are light, like a SIP panel is a light panelized engineered product that you can use to keep the weight of the house down. You don't want to put a ton of concrete, so you don't want radiant in-floor heat. It's complex, but if you have a builder that's familiar, you can definitely can make this all very simple, right? By making a lot of the not making the decisions for you, but just this is how we're going to do it. We don't have to reinvent the wheel every time, right?
Right.
So the second way, so the first way is the helical piles, right, which we talked about. You drill into the ground until you find something bearing way down there. The second one, and if you only have 2 or 3 feet of peat, is you can dig it out. You can actually just bring an excavator. They'll dig that all that out until you find something that's bearing. It's probably not hard pan, which is what we like to typically build on. But again, as long as it's something, you know, bearing, is strong enough to bear the weight of the house. The only caveat with that, is the water table. In certain cases, you're only going to dig down a couple feet and you're going to find running water. And so what is going to happen if you dig down and start pumping that water out? What's going to happen to the neighboring houses?
Right, right.
Right? So all of a sudden, they start to sink the more you pump the water out. And that's where the helical piles are the most economical and what I would coin as the safest way to build on peat. And just because you're not disturbing your neighbor's property.
Right. Have we been building with helical piles for a long time in Vancouver?
Not a tremendous amount of time, to be honest. They were more invented and brought in to build commercial stuff in Delta, and then of course now we have several different manufacturers of helical piles. Again, not all of them are the same, so there's research and understanding that needs to be had there. Again, you know, some of them aren't treated. The metal itself isn't galvanized. And when you're working with a highly acidic substrate like the peat, it attacks that metal very rapidly. So they have to be treated and coated and so on. So,
that'd be brutal if you made that mistake.
Exactly. So there's definitely, and some of them, the life on them, the lifetime warranties and stuff can be as low as 20 years. Yeah. So there's caution there, but again, if you have an experienced builder, they know who and what and where and what to use. Traditionally, and you've seen them on the side of the highway, they would use the driven piles, you know, the big round tubes, right? And then they have that big hammer that hits on a crane that hits them, and they're loud. And those are quite effective as well, but they're costly. And also, again, if you start hammering away on your property, what's going to happen to your neighbor's property, right? Every time that ground shakes, you have a consolidation and that house is going to drop and drop and drop and drop. And yeah, that's a big problem, right? You don't want to have lawsuits with your neighbors. That's not the best way to start out your new neighborly, yeah, you know.
Welcome to the neighborhood.
Exactly, exactly. Sorry about your house. It's now 6 inches shorter than what it was.
It's funny because that's the – so, I mean, you've seen in excavation, often the geotech gets brought in because they're concerned about – especially where narrow lots where you don't have a lot of clearance between you and your neighbor,
mm-hmm,
and you have to excavate almost the full width of the lot.
Right. That's right.
You get to a place where the geotech comes and is constantly on site. And the other thing we haven't really mentioned, but geotechs are really important, but they're also maybe one of the more expensive engineers out there perhaps?
Yeah, I mean,
it's not a cheap cost to have a geotech on site often.
That's a good way to put it. It's definitely not a cheap alternative, basically. Right. And again, they're taking a horrendous amount of risk, right?
Exactly.
So their cost is warranted because they take a tremendous amount of risk. A lot 100%. Of things can go wrong.
100%. Right?
And that's where – now, we've done full basements in peat where the basement itself would be completely submerged in the wintertime. So, and we have completely waterproofed that basement. It's called tanking. And we've built, basically had to build a retaining cage that completely encased that foundation. And, you know, that was a very costly venture for that particular individual. And that's definitely on the more complex end of things, the work that we've done.
They must have really liked that street.
Yeah. The thing was is that
I have to be by trouble.
The trouble with Vancouver is they have a bylaw that your basement and main floor need to be the same square footage in order to max, as you know, right. in order to max out your FSR. And then that third floor is, you know, you shrink that in a little bit, right? So you're getting hit twice with the peak, right? And because typically 90% of the time there's no basements in a peak build. You know, it's just, you just forego that. You pay a little bit of extra on those helical piles, but you're not building a basement, so it kind of works out in the wash for you. But you'll definitely lose that FSR, the square footage, right?
Right.
So in terms of like geotech, I'm just thinking of the process. So yeah. Somebody's out with you, you know, you're generous enough with your time to go see an open house. They love a place. It's on the bog.
Yeah.
The next steps that you just outlined, kind of establishing, figuring out kind of what you need to do, can we talk about how much that tacks on in terms of time and even like ballpark figures? I guess it depends on what they find, but mm-hmm. are you tacking on like an extra $100,000, an extra $50,000, mm-hmm. you know, like in real general terms?
Sure.
An extra $500,000 potentially?
Yeah. So basically in our realm, the simplest peat build, we're talking about a $40,000 to $50,000 uptick, okay? But again, we've gone right up to close to $500,000 to get back up to grade, depending on, you know, the complexities of the project. So it's quite vast, but the majority is definitely on that lower end. So you're gonna, you buy this house on peat, you bring your builder along, or he's already a part of or he or she is a part of the process. You get your geotech, you do your testing, you figure out how deep you need to go, and then you design your house basically. And the slab of your house that's going is almost a separate entity. So that becomes this third party, so to speak, and it is fully structural, fully engineered, and it'll get you to grade with a flat surface, the dimensions that you need for your house, and then you're free to design the house that you want from there on, basically. So once you're at grade, you're home free. Though all that work is done up front, it does add a bit of time, but it's more so just organizing the machinery to get to site to drill those piles in, because the piles, the helical piles, have a helix welded onto the bottom of a pipe, basically, and they just screw it in the ground, and they just go and go and go until it hits again a certain kips, and they measure that kips by actually trying to pull it back out of the ground. So basically, if it can withstand 20,000 pounds of pressure pulling it back out of the ground, it'll definitely handle that pressure driving it into right. the ground, basically.
Right.
Yeah. And then we usually, it's a grid pattern of about 8 feet, just for generic terms, okay, that we're using in terms of the piles. So in certain cases, you're in that, you know, call it 24, 26, maybe if you're in Vancouver-ish, right, with the size of houses. And of course, that can go up for garages and any other structures that are on the house, right?
So if I understand, though, correctly, you're almost getting, as a person who bought a bog land lot, mm-hmm. a lot on bog land,
yeah,
you're kind of almost getting hit twice, because you, first of all, you have the added cost of the, you know, call it 70 to 100,000 potentially, mm-hmm. of finding the solid ground.
Yeah.
But then you also have taken the hit of losing
the square footage.
So yeah. your best use now is impeded to the maybe 0.15 or 0.2 mm-hmm. of your buildable.
Yeah.
Sounds like.
So, yeah, and I don't, you know, again, an architect would be able to answer that better than I would in terms of what the actual calculations are. But, you know, even going from, you know, 70% down to 60% is that's a big deal in Vancouver,
sure.
right?
Sure.
You know yeah. what I mean? So that's a huge deal. So you are getting hit. And then, of course, you know, on top of that, you do have the lower lot value, which never really goes away.
Right.
I you guys might know better than me, but even a house that is built on piles and brought up to code and just built, it's still going to be cheaper than the one that's on solid ground, I think.
Yeah.
Right? I think that's right. A fair assumption, right? So you do get dinged. And so, you know, but if it's a long-term investment that you're going to live in and then your children are going to live in, then why not? right?
You're basically saying you got to hold it for 100 years.
You got to hold the darn thing. Yeah, yeah.
Or if you, sure. I mean, you can imagine that there's a lot of family homes that have that were originally built on the bog that now they want to stay put in the area or build it out and the family has.
There's some wonderful neighborhoods in, sure. in those
bogs,
right?
Yeah, that's the, I feel like that's a constant conversation about Trout Lake, right? It's like, that's my God, look at this place right across from the park. Yeah. It's like, hold on.
Yeah, no, a good friend of mine lives right on Trout Lake, unimpeded view of the park, and we renovated that place years ago. We didn't do any of the structural work. The house has a very large, it's a large lot, so it has a large footprint, which is actually working towards, like, for it. And, you know, we were able to jack up a few corners, and we removed the chimney, which really weighs down on the bog in a specific load, so it's not really good for the peat bog to have chimneys and stuff. But again, prior to that renovation, the, you know, a great party game was to race the cans across the living room floor, right? and it's just part of his tears. Exactly, exactly. It's part of the community to have a house that, you know, is a little roly poly.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fascinating. Mm-hmm. So, I guess the other thing is like one of the things that when we spoke off air, Jeff, you were saying like a lot of companies don't necessarily know how to tackle or they don't have the experience.
That's
so,
right.
And so why you guys seem to have kind of filled a bit of a void here to some extent. Like what? It sounds like it's a complicated build.
It is a lot of fun. We're suckers for punishment basically is what it is. You know, we were contacted early on, and I don't like to shy away from a challenge, right? Because it helps set you apart, right? And you know, who wants to just do the same thing every day, day in, day out anyway? So I do enjoy these challenging builds, and they force you to do your research and think and learn. So it brings a lot to a builder who enjoys that type of work, and I like to educate people and other builders, and I like to learn myself. So that's basically how we got started, right? And of course, you want to stay employed. So if that means you're building a house on peat, you have to learn how to build a house on peat to keep going and stay employed, then so be it. And so we learned it on early on. We were very lucky to meet the right people right off the bat as well. So, you know, we got in contact with the right engineers and the right subcontractors. We were fortunate that way, and I think that was a big part of the reason why we've stuck with it and done so many projects on peat. And it's kind of the rest is history, so to speak, you know. And once you've done a few of them, then you just know who to call and what to do and what the process is. And it's really no different than building any other house. There's just a couple of more phone calls and a couple of more steps. But at the end of the day, we're still going to build you a house that will, you know, perform in a seismic event and so on and so forth. So,
if I understand correctly, if somebody's building on the bog right now, they're not going to have the issues with, you know, it's going to perform. It's not going to sink, you know, after you guys are done with through
That's
the whole
right.
process.
That's right.
The only thing is the loss of some of the square footage really with the basement and the fact that when you go to sell it, somebody's going to go, wait a second, is this on the bog basically, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But at the very least, when that happens, you have all the documentation and engineering to show them that it's not going anywhere.
Right.
And in fact, that's part of how we have to build the house is we have to plan for the rest of the soil and the houses and the sidewalk and the road to continue to drop around the house. So all of our piping that come out of the house or your drainage and so on all has to be highly flexible, very strong piping because everything else is still continuing to drop. You have to remember that. And in 25 years, 40 years after we build this house, there'll be gaps, you know, 6 inches, 8 inches between the soil and the actual house. As that peat continues to what they call, the term they use is consolidate. So it continues to break down. Which is pretty neat to think about, right?
Yeah, no kidding.
It's beyond my pay grade.
Speaking of grades. I just have a couple more questions.
Sure,
one is, and this is more out of curiosity, like most people that contact you, are they aware that they're buying on the bog or that they have a house on the bog? Or is it like at that stage, are they like, I just made a huge mistake, or I just found this out, you know, I've been there 3 years or whatever.
Right.
Is it?
Most of the time, the real estate agents have done their job and they have notified them of that. The trouble that then follows that is maybe the misinformation or just lack of understanding on what it's going to take. And again, that is so lot specific.
Yeah.
Right. You know, for an example, those helical piles are charged by the foot. You pay for that first helix, which is 7 feet tall, and then you're paying for every single linear foot of those pipes. And in some cases, there's 30 of them. So you take that number, multiply that by 30. So the cost can vary quite wildly depending on the depth.
Right.
And so that's where people get into trouble. They're aware of the bog. And they're okay. Yeah, we know we're gonna, you know, pay an extra $25,000 when it's actually, unfortunately, in their case, it could be $125,000. So there's a bit of misinformation there, or just a lack of understanding is more, I think, what happens. But the majority of people are the folks that have just lived there their whole life, and they want to build new, right? Yeah. And, you know, the whole multi-generational thing in Vancouver is huge. So, you know, they're going in with it with the parents or the kids or, you know, however that looks. And they just wanted to stop shifting, basically.
Yeah. right.
So, yeah.
Maybe we'll leave it there then, unless you got any more questions.
Well, I have just one more question, and it's not bog specific, but, you know, we on the show we talked to mortgage brokers, economists, politicians, all of these people, but we've basically talked to everyone about COVID and predictions and everything. And I'm not going to ask you any predictions on the market, but I am curious if you guys have been busy this year and what your years looked like as a home builder here in Vancouver.
Well, it's a good question. We definitely did have that initial, you know, drawback.
Right. And you guys were busy at the start of the year?
Yeah. We're busy. And then we had a few of those folks. We did have that drawback. It really depends on the type of construction as well. We've had other colleagues that work in town condos and townhouses exclusively. They really got clawed back and were really hurt by it. Luckily for us with the single families and stuff, we're not working, you know, directly or in the same house with our clients. So that was a blessing. However, the phones are ringing off the hook. Our architects are super busy. So even the guys out there who might be struggling, it's going to be short-lived is my expectation, because, you know, again, we can usually see that wave coming down the pipe through the professionals that are out there. And it's definitely coming. We've had feedback that architects have never been busier in their career than what they are right now, which is great news for us. Coming down the pipe.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah. We also have this segment called the Five Wire, Jeff. Five quick questions about you in Vancouver. Okay. Can you stick around for that?
I sure can, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So what is your favorite neighborhood in Vancouver?
East Van. I lived in East Van, Renfrew Heights, and I loved that area.
Nice. Oh, yeah. I've actually been talking a lot about Renfrew Heights lately. Yeah.
Good pocket.
Yeah, it is a good pocket. It's changing rapidly right now, too.
No kidding.
Yeah. I drive through our old neighborhood and it's not the same.
Yeah.
Where are you now? Are you
out? I'm actually out in Langley now.
Oh, okay.
I bought a few acres out that way. So
you can take the boy out of the farm, but you can't.
That's right. That's exactly.
You don't even have to finish it.
You know, I needed a second full-time job, right? Who doesn't, right? So there you go.
Favorite bar or restaurant?
Man, that is a good question. I'm terrible at this stuff. I don't really. You know what? There used to be a sushi restaurant down in Denman that has now closed. It was 100% my favorite. But like the sushi restaurants, they kind of come and go, right? Float around. So right now, I'm tapped out. I don't have anything. Sorry.
Hey, fair enough.
Yeah. One book you would recommend any of our listeners to read?
Doesn't have to be building specific.
It doesn't have to be building specific. That's a good one too. Anything from Wendell Berry.
Anything from Wendell Berry.
And if you don't know who he is, look him up.
Yeah.
Okay. Look him up.
Good one. Good one.
Okay.
One piece of advice that you'd give your 18-year-old self.
Oh, man. Just one, hard. Eh? Just one? Oh, my goodness gracious. focus better, harder, longer, just focus.
That's the first time we've had that answer, but that's a good one.
That is a good one.
Yeah. One that every 18-year-old needs right now. Just better, longer, harder.
Longer, harder, yes. Just in every way, focus.
Yeah. Turn off your phone.
Yeah.
Last but not least, what is something in the last year you've bought for under $1,000 that has had a lasting impact on your life?
Man, these are hard questions.
We saved the best for last.
I always deliver it like they're easy.
Five quick questions. Five quick questions. The Instapot.
Is there not an?
And there is a full-on cult following on the Instapot. I tell you.
What is the Instapot?
Wait, no. This is the second person that's had it on the show.
There you go.
Really?
It's that life-altering. I'm telling you right now.
Is this like for like? Is it like a slow cooker?
It's everything.
It was a while back where the Instapot was mentioned. Yeah.
Yeah. You gotta check it out. Yeah. It's a slow cooker, pressure cooker, rice cooker, yogurt maker, everything all in one. You just plug it in and walk away. It's awesome.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a life changer.
I don't need any more of these things, but yeah, I feel like
but you're going
to
buy
it. Thank God my wife doesn't listen to this, but I feel like we're all going to get an Instapot one of these days.
Yeah, you
got coming.
Get them when they're on sale, though. You know, that's just the Scottish in me. That's just, you got to get them when they're on sale. But
that's fantastic. Yeah. Well, Jeff, how can people find out more about what you guys are doing at JDL Homes?
Just check out our website and Facebook, JDL Homes, you know, Vancouver, and we're out there. We're hard on the social media. And I do a lot of training seminars and on various things as well. So I'm usually out and about. We'll post all that sort of stuff.
Cool.
And I've got, like you guys found, there's a few YouTube videos out there from us and all that sort of stuff with regard to the peat. And if you don't mind, I'll just take a second just to say, you know, I know it's kind of scary the way that we've been communicating about the peat, but it doesn't have to be. Right. You know what I mean? There's costs and so on. I don't want to scare people off of the peat. I don't want a bunch of hate mail from people that live on peat bogs that are trying to sell their house.
Right. Right.
But because it's possible and it's relatively easy. It just, you know, there's costs associated with anything. It's no different than building a hot tub on your roof. You know, there's costs associated. Right?
I think the big thing is a lot of people in the market have actively avoided peat. But I mean, if you get it at the right discounted price.
Yep.
There's nothing wrong with it,
and you'll have a perfectly sound house in the end.
Yeah. And like we've said it a few times, but some of the best like micro neighborhoods are on.
That's peat, right.
Right.
That's right.
There's 100%. And people all often think of Trout Lake, but there's pockets of peat everywhere. Right.
Yeah, that's right.
It's, it's something to consider. But
we'll have the map.
We'll have the map and a link to JDL Home so you can learn more and you can communicate with Jeff. And thanks so much for taking the time today.
No, thank you, guys. It was fun. It was fun.
Right on. So there you have it, folks, our discussion with Jeff Langford from JDL Homes Vancouver.
Really enjoyed that conversation with Jeff, Matt. And if you are looking for a house in the city of Vancouver, or actually in greater Vancouver in general, you need to be aware of building conditions. You need to be aware of the peat bog areas. You also need to know about floodplains and anything that can compromise soil conditions for building. So this is something. Step one is check out the peat bog map for the city of Vancouver. This is available on our website, Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. We have a high definition copy of the map. It's going to be on our site. You can check that out. And a second step, which we do a lot for our clients that are looking in East Vancouver in the detached market, is we often call the city to verify as well. The city is really good at responding to those calls and checking. I don't know if they're, to be quite honest, I don't know what they're actually consulting that's any better.
I feel like they're consulting the map and they might just be.
That they have a better map than us?
While they're zooming in, they said, well, often you get, from our perspective, it doesn't look like there's going to be any issues or something like that.
And they always, there's disclaimers, right?
Yeah.
They
couldn't
always
say
make
for
a,
certain.
Yeah, couldn't say for certain, but
it's definitely. It's not in an area of concern for us at this moment.
Right. And then, I mean, if it still is questionable, you can always get some soil tests done, get, you know, take it to the next steps. Call someone like Jeff, who can help you out with it and point you in the right direction and get you in touch with the right people.
Absolutely. What else do we have, Adam? Today, we have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is where all things real estate live. We got the Sellers Club. We got the Livewire. This is our weekly email list. We got Deal of the Month. Most importantly.
Yes.
Well, is it most importantly? I don't know. But we got the tried and true. This is Private Client Services. We have hung this podcast hat on Private Client Services for 5 years.
Yeah, man. If you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us are power walking by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information. It's free. It's at your fingertips. It's available at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. This is, by the way, and for people that are new listeners that aren't part of the VREP community, this is how to look for real estate in Vancouver. It's a research tool. You can set it very specifically for targeted searches, and it sends you listing updates in real time when something hits the market. It also tells you what something sold for, and it's a phenomenal way to look for real estate.
That's exactly right. There is no better way to look for real estate in Vancouver. If you're not using PCS, you're doing it wrong. If you want to talk about that, the Sellers Club, the Bog Map, anything real estate related at all. We just did a talk with Dustin Woodhouse this morning.
Yes.
That's going to be on Vimeo. I don't even know where that's going. But,
it's going to be. We'll put that maybe on our site. We should maybe release that as a featurette. We'll talk to Dustin about it. But that was a good chat with Dustin.
Yeah, it was a great conversation with the old fan favorite there, Dustin Woodhouse. But if you want to talk about that too, 778-847-2854 or matt@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or adam@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
We also got that secret line, info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
A guy who's familiar with pile driving, but not so much the bog, more so just a fan of the WWE.
Have a good week, guys.
Ho, ho, they're at the bog down in the valley, oh. Rear bog, they're at the bog down in the valley, oh. Well, in the bog, there was a hole, a rear hole, a rattling hole. Hole in the bog down in the valley, oh. Ho, ho, they're at the bog down in the valley, oh. Rear bog, they're at the bog down in the valley, oh.
2,000 Spaces for Radio. Subscribe today.